Welcome. Welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 72.
And I got nothing this week because, you know, I always do it off the top of my head and my mind's blank at this moment. But welcome!
Welcome!
So we finally watched Frozen Empire. I know. David, what's wrong with you? Why did you take so long to watch it? Well, I don't know. I have no reason why we haven't.
We were supposed to go see it in the theater, but that wound up not happening.
Yep. Because, you know, everybody's getting fucked by inflation and things and
bills.
Stuff.
Bills that never end.
Yep.
Fuck adulting.
Yep. This simulator game sucks.
Yeah.
The graphics are good, but this sim sucks. But anyway, I liked it. What about you?
I did.
I mean, it became more of a becoming of age movie for Phoebe, but there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I guess times are changing from what I remember Ghostbusters being about, all about the ghosts and stuff. And like, you okay?
Yeah.
Are you trying to see what's wrong with your laptop there?
No. Just watching the color change.
Okay.
Sorry.
But there's nothing wrong with it becoming a coming of age film or whatever, because, you know, times are changing about that. I mean, it's a Ghostbusters movie. I would have liked to see more backstory of about, you know, the entity that they were supposed to be fighting and whatnot. Like,
yeah,
they did in the second one. And
they did some, but not a lot.
Right. It's like it's trapped in a fucking ball, but it's going to do all these things.
Yeah.
Unlike the other ones, but it makes sense for the plot line of it. It wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. No. Nothing. I'd watch it again.
Yeah.
Unlike the 2016 one, I'll never watch that again. Once was enough.
Yeah. That one doesn't count.
There's some Facebook groups for Ghostbuster fandoms that you are not allowed to talk about that one. They will delete posts. They will only approve posts about doing 2016 cosplay. And that's it. There's like anything that talks about the films, anything like that. No, but if it's like a cosplaying question, they'll approve it, even though people still try and drag people about it. But it is what
that's
it is.
Stupid.
Yep.
I was surprised how quick it went to Netflix.
Yeah, so did I. Because I remember like growing up, movies going to VHS, it would be like 3-4 months at minimum, if not longer than that, maybe, or just seemed that long.
It always felt longer than that to me, but right. It could have been the excitement of waiting for it to come out.
Yeah, time moves slower when you're a kid, so it could be that.
That's for damn sure.
But, you know, I don't know if they had them up where you live, but I remember the mall here at, like, the Target. They had, like, one of those combo TVs on it, I think, like, with, like, the newest kids movie, like Jurassic Park or a Disney movie set up by the toy section.
Mm-mm.
You know, kind of making it like an impulse buy kind of deal almost. They guys didn't have those?
Not that I remember. That was a long time ago.
I know. That was always the one place my mom could find me or by like video games or the Hot Wheels aisle or G.I. Joe aisle or something like that. Because, you know, back in those days, we could just be like left in a department store wandering because parents are going to find us in one or two places or three in my case, basically, because, you know, over by video games.
Yep. Yeah. I would have been found in the Barbie aisle.
Surprisingly.
Yep. Not surprisingly. I loved Barbies. Like, I played with those fuckers till I was like 13. Not gonna lie. I loved Barbies.
Isn't that kind of weird thing? We just eventually just stop playing with toys and we're growing up really like, I'm gonna play with toys forever. I don't care what's going on. And then we just suddenly stop doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, now you got video games. Those are,
yep,
I guess, toys.
Right.
In essence.
Or, you know, model trains too, or select cars.
Yeah.
So, what do you have for this week, since it's our combined episode week, Sarah?
True crime.
Oh, there's a big shock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know. One of these days, you're gonna throw me off. And come in here with some history bit and be like, what are you doing? That's not your thing.
That's my shtick.
Yeah. I got a history tale that only, like, this is the last possible week episode I can do it because the Olympics are closing, or closed this week. you know, the Olympics, you know, it just ended. So this is like the only time I can get it done.
Yeah.
So
unless you want to wait
another
4 more years.
Yeah, 4 more years. And I just bank the story until, you know, then. But who knows what's going to happen in 4 years.
Yeah.
Not like anything bad's going to happen with us in 4 years. So I'm doing it now.
Right.
Because like I said, we don't know what's going to happen in 4 years. Like nothing bad with us, obviously, but who knows? But first, what do we get? It's actually, before I do that, it's actually was a suggestion from one of our listeners that she's been hounding me to do this. I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it finally.
What a nag.
I know. Not mentioning names. She already knows who she is.
Can I mention names?
I mean, if you could, because she might find you to be a demon if you do that.
Oh. So we won't say a real name. We'll just say Noodle.
Yep.
Noodle's been a hound and demon.
Yep. A demon hound, almost, you could say.
Fair.
So before we get into that, we got our on this day for August 14th. Gunfighter John Henry Doc Holliday was born in 1851 in Griffin, Georgia.
Doc Holliday?
Doc Holliday, the actual person himself.
Okay.
And not the Volbeat song. In 1985, Michael Jackson bought ATV Music's, including publishing rights to most of the Beatles songs catalog for $47.5 million, and I forgot to inflate it. 10 years later, he sold his half of his interest to Sony for $150 million.
He still made a hell of a profit.
Oh, I'm sure. Bruce Lee's The Way of the Dragon premiered in U.S. theaters in 1972. In The Way of the Dragon, Tang Long, played by Bruce Lee, is summoned to Rome to aid the niece of a family friend who owns a Chinese restaurant and is having trouble with the Italian mafia that enlists the help of American karate master named Colt, played by Chuck Norris. The film's climax puts Lee and Norris in a fight in the Roman Colosseum. The film made $130 million, which comes out to be $700 million today in 2024.
Damn.
In 2016, Jamaican sprint star Usain Bolt wins the coveted 100-meter Olympic gold medal in 9.81 seconds at Rio de Janeiro Olympics. He was the first man to win this event 3 times.
Like, just watching him on TV.
Right.
The speed that their legs move mm-hmm. is ridiculous to watch. It almost looks like they're just gliding.
Right.
How like fast their legs are moving. Yeah. Yeah.
And just to give you an idea how fast that is, our intro is like 3, 8.5 seconds long, maybe. So, and he ran in 9.5.
So good, listen to it almost 3 full times.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
In 1997, convicted Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh, formally sentenced to death by Oklahoma Court of Appeals.
Good fucker.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Nope.
In 1994, the space telescope Hubble photographs Uranus with rings, bright clouds, and a high altitude haze above the planet's south pole. The planet Uranus is 1.7 billion miles away from Earth. I knew you were going to start fucking laughing as soon as I said Uranus the first time.
It wasn't that you said Uranus. Mm-hmm. It was that whole line. It took a picture of Uranus.
Right.
Oh, shit.
And for, you know, some friends that listen to it, and I made through another podcast, they're going to know, they were going to think of one of the robots from that show that's known as B1TCH455 because he likes to take pictures of buttholes.
Oh, what show is this?
It's from Scatcast, one of the sketch shows called Gunner Halifax. No, not Gunner. It's not Gunner Halifax. It's Laverne, Nova Scotia.
Oh, okay.
Which is a spinoff of Gunner Halifax, which is the worst alien in the universe, which is like a take on Star Trek.
Gotcha.
Basically. And actor Ron Palillo, best known as Arnold Horshack on Welcome Back, Kotter, dies from a heart attack at the age of 63 in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. He also had a very long list of voice acting spots as well. Not spots, but roles as a voice actor in mm-hmm. animation as well.
Huh.
And that's our on this day.
For August 14th. One thing before we get started.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest sister's birthday is in 2 days, so if anybody wants to get in the Facebook group and say happy birthday, big sister, go ahead. It'll be on the 16th, which is Friday.
No, it's also on Friday?
What?
40th anniversary of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I know.
So anyhow.
It always happens like that. Yep. We already have something planned, and then something else that we would like to do pops up, and we're like, can't.
Yep, and my nephew's now probably too old to on continue on that tradition to go and take them see it like I did for the last two anniversaries.
Yeah. Where they do it every 5 years?
Yeah. They did it the 30th, they did it on the 35th, and then now here's the 40th.
Yeah.
So, are you ready to get started then?
Yes.
All right, let's get going.
So, just a note to begin with. This case will teach you that not all of your friends or coworkers are actually your friend, and some just can't be trusted.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
This is another case that really pissed me off.
Oh, so you're going to do that to us 2 weeks in a row? Great.
I don't know if it'll piss you guys off, but right. I know it pissed me off.
Yeah, that last one did, because I had nothing to fucking say at the end of it.
Yeah. Georgia Williams was born on September 17th, 1995, in Telford, Shropshire, England. So at that time, she was, well, her current time, she would be 17 years old.
Yeah, and I think that's the region of Valhalla I'm goofing around on right now, too. But anyway.
Oh, what? Shropshire?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just hunting and fishing, basically.
Oh. She was born to Stephen Lynette Williams and had a sister named Scarlett. Georgia was considered a very family-oriented person, extremely friendly, outgoing, caring, loving, energetic, pretty much anything you could describe a person as she was at, except the bad stuff. She loved helping people, especially the ones that she cared about, but she also cared. She also helped people that she didn't know. Middle school was a really rough time for her. She was bullied through basically the entire thing. Kids are fucking mean.
Yeah.
High school was a different story for Georgia. She was extremely popular, had a ton of friends, and wound up being like the it girl in school. Like, most popular. Everybody wanted to be her friend if they weren't already. Okay. She was just like the number one chick. She was actually training as an air cadet to help her get and fulfill her dream of being a paramedic.
So she wasn't trained to be a space cadet?
Not a space cadet. She was 17 years old, had a job at a gas station in town where she seemingly made even more friends out of customers that walked through the front door or coworkers that she just so happened to be paired up with.
So you're saying she was training to be an air medic at the age of 17?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. I'd known a paramedic that basically was a paramedic before the age of 21, and that's what he's actually doing now. He was actually like the youngest medic to ever become certified in the area we live in, actually, at like the age of 20.
It wouldn't be any different than when you were at the station. The cadets or whatever you guys called them would come in and at the end of high school, basically, and, you know, maybe got jobs out of it at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no different. One of the coworkers that she worked with regularly was really, really shy, super awkward, and pretty much just a loner. For lack of a better term. Coworkers would plan like outings or get-togethers outside of work, and this guy was never invited to any of them. He never had plans of his own. He was never asked to join the coworkers' events, even though everybody else that worked there was.
Yeah.
Georgia took pity on this coworker and befriended him. They became really close really quickly. And at this point, they were both participating in whatever events the coworkers had planned because she was bringing him along.
Yeah.
So his name is Jamie Reynolds, and he, at the time of what happened, was 22 years old. Jamie started to have romantic feelings towards his 17-year-old coworker. He had asked George out a few times and kept commenting on how he would like to be her boyfriend. Just little comments like that so that she would know, but never like outright asking her out.
Right. So did you say his age already and I just cleared out space?
22.
Okay. I thought you had said that and I was like, maybe I spaced it or you're like hiding it for reveal because he's like fucking 60 or some shit.
Oh my God, no. 22.
Right.
Which isn't a huge difference, but again. No. And legal age of consent, I should have looked it up for England.
Right.
But I didn't. It could be different than it is here in the U.S.
I'm going to guess to say it's probably no different.
While Georgia appreciated his honesty, she ultimately turned him down as politely as she could. You know, she told him that she was not really looking for a partner at the time and just, you know, the cliche, I don't want to lose you as a friend.
Right.
And this clearly upset Jamie. You know, most people don't like the feeling of being rejected.
Right.
It's not fun for anybody. But he was able to get over his butt hurt and continued to go on just being her friend. This is what it looked like on the outside anyways. However, the rejection basically by his dream girl made him come a little unhinged.
And by a little, she means a lot, I bet.
Mm-hmm. He started having like just a very deep obsession with Georgia, and we'll leave that there for now.
All right.
Jamie turned 23 and told Georgia he didn't want to work at the gas station anymore. He wanted a full-time job that paid better. I mean, understandable. Georgia talked to him about what he wanted to do, and Jamie said that he didn't know. She suggested finding something related to any of the hobbies he had. That way it would keep his interest and, you know, that way it would keep his interest longer than the gas station had.
I want to be an Olympic underwater basket weaver.
Correct.
Or something like that.
Jamie said he did like photography, so Georgia suggested he try and make a career path that way. She even volunteered to help him make his portfolio, which, you know, if anybody's going to want pictures taken, they're going to want to see a portfolio right. of some of the things you've done.
Yep. Because that was one of the things that we were taught in high school when I was taking those classes.
Yeah. Jamie had asked her if she would be his first real model, and she jumped at the chance. Well, like, what 17, 18-year-old girl isn't going to be like, no, I don't want my pictures taken professionally.
Right.
You know? But, yeah. So the photo shoot was planned for May 26, 2013, which was a Sunday. The plan was for Georgia and a group of her friends to go to Jamie's parents' house to do the group shots. Georgia's family was throwing together a barbecue, and she almost had to cancel as her grandparents were coming in and she really wanted to see them. She decided to not cancel as Jamie lived really close to her, so it wouldn't have taken her much time to go there, get some group shots done, and come back and see her family. Georgia did her own hair and makeup and then left to go to Jamie's. Her dad, Steve, told her how beautiful she looked, mentioning that she looked like Sandy from the movie Grease. She left at 7:30 that evening with the thought of coming back quickly. 3 hours later, she still wasn't home and family didn't think much of it at the time. Her mom sent a quick text asking when she'd be home, and she almost immediately received a response that Georgia would be home soon. She was just hanging out with her friends for a while since they were all together. This didn't faze mom, and that's because the text ended with a bunch of emojis, which apparently Georgia was famous for.
All right.
Mom texted again 6:30 the next morning asking where she was again and when she would be home. She received a response at 7:30 from Georgia saying that she stayed over at a friend's house. And she also let her mom know that her phone battery was dying, so she may not be able to text again because it was going to die. Lynette was unaware that these texts were not coming from Georgia. They were coming from someone pretending to be Georgia. May 27th was a day that Georgia's parents had known was coming due to the excitement from Georgia. She had a concert, music festival, whatever you want to call it, to go to.
Yeah, it was probably a festival because they're like huge over there compared to
That's here. That's kind of what I figured. Georgia hadn't come home yet, so Steve and Lynette just assumed that she went straight from her friend's house to this event. And this was fine with them because they knew she'd be home before the next morning since she had her first actual driving test to do, and she was like extremely excited about getting that piece of freedom.
That's something that any teenager wouldn't want to miss anyhow.
Oh yeah. Steve and Lynette wound up staying up really late that Monday waiting for her to return home, but she didn't. They started calling her friends to see if they had been with her or heard from her, and they hadn't. They started to call family members to see if they had heard from her or seen her, and again, none had, and they went to bed, figuring maybe she didn't have, you know, time to charge her phone before she left or didn't have, you know, access to a cord, but they just went to bed.
Right, but even though it's 2013, that does seem a little odd.
Yeah. When they woke up on May 28th, Georgia still hadn't come back home. They called the police to file a missing persons report, or whatever the UK's equivalent is of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
They were able to give the police every single bit of information that they could. That included the photo shoot with Jamie, the concert, the fact that she was staying with the friend, even though all her friends had said that she wasn't with them and that they hadn't seen her. Police took over and started looking into Jamie, and what they found was pretty suspicious. Jamie had been caught red-handed by police while he was trying to strangle a teenage girl in 2008. Mm. Police didn't do much but give him a slap on the wrist and just let him go. There was no justice for the girl that he did that to. Like, she had to continue on and live her life knowing that the asshole that was probably trying to kill her just got to walk away.
No, I'm sure.
This was pretty much the only thing the officers needed to go straight to Jamie's house and knock on the door. When they did, there was no answer by anyone. Because remember, this happened at Jamie's parents' house. Due to the seriousness of what could be, they broke in and looked around the house and no one was there. This is when the hunt for Jamie would officially start. They went to the gas station both Jamie and Georgia worked at, and coworkers were adamant that neither of the two showed up for their shifts that day. The police contacted Jamie's parents, but they weren't home as they were on vacation, but they did get to talk to him. The parents gave information to help the police, such as the make, model, and plate number of the van that he was driving, which I believe, I didn't put it in, but I believe it belonged to his stepdad. Police put out what could be the UK equivalent of a BOLO.
Right, be on the lookout.
Yeah. This went to every police station around the UK. Jamie was found, and quite quickly at that. However, he was very far from home. He had driven over 200 miles away to Glasgow, Scotland. Like, if that doesn't scream red flag.
Right.
I don't know what would.
Where's the guy with the giant red flags? We need him.
Like, he fled. That right. made him look way worse. Even if he didn't do anything, it still makes him right. look real fucking suspicious. When asked where Georgia was, he said he didn't know. Shropshire police drove to him and picked him up just to drive all the way back and question him. So it was like over 200 miles one way.
Yeah.
That's insane. Sadly, during this time, the police did notify Georgia's parents and let them know that so far the outcome didn't look good. They hadn't found anything, but Jamie wasn't really playing along. I'm sure you could imagine the emotions that were running through her parents and her whole family at that time. With Jamie in custody, the police were given the go-ahead to search his house. And they didn't find much except for his camera. Since they knew Georgia had been there for a photo shoot, they took the camera and the SD card back to the police station. See, Jamie had deleted all of the pictures that he had taken.
Of course.
But why? Why would he delete them? Police were going to find out.
Right.
Pretty quickly. They handed them off to whoever does that kind of thing.
Forensics lab?
Probably. And they were able to retrieve every photo that was deleted off that camera. The photos painted a story, which was exactly what happened to Georgia. Jamie apparently wasn't a very smart man, even though he thought he was by deleting the photos. You can't get rid of them forever.
Right.
He thought you could.
Yeah, that's how that works.
He was stupidly mistaken. Once the police recovered the photos, they found a perfect timeline of what had happened to Georgia. The beginning, the middle, and the end. The beginning of the pictures were actual pictures shot of Georgia. Like, you know, posed differently.
Right.
Different areas of the house, whatever. From there, it transitioned to pictures of Georgie laying naked on a bed. They assumed that it was Jamie's bed. But this was a little different because she had a red noose around her neck. One of these pictures actually showed Georgia smiling while the noose was around her neck. And then towards the end of the pictures, they found one of Georgia, dead, hanging from a landing in Jamie's parents' house. Now, from what was gathered, these pictures were taken after Jamie had told Georgia that he wanted pictures of her in a death-like pose, standing on top of a box that he would edit out afterwards. Georgia went along with that, not expecting what would happen next. What do you think happened?
He kicked the boxes out.
Jamie kicked the box out from under Georgia's feet and continued to photograph her as she squirmed and struggled for air before ultimately dying. In total, there were hundreds of pictures that Jamie had taken of her while she was alive, while she was fighting to live, and after she was dead. She was seen in these photos in different sexual positions all throughout Jamie's parents' house, including in Jamie's parents' bed. He had been having sex with her dead body throughout their entire house and took pictures of all of it. Jamie had also taken some of Georgia's jewelry that she was wearing as, like, little trophies.
Right, as killers tend to do, but even though he's not technically a serial killer.
Right, just a fucked up individual.
Yeah.
Further into the police searching Jamie's family home, they found almost 17,000 pictures and over 70 videos of people being raped, dark videos of people being murdered and tortured, which is everything that he did to Georgia.
So he was like a snuff fanatic, basically.
Jamie's parents came home immediately from their vacation to speak with the police. They were honest about the fact that he had been interested in watching violent porn videos since he was 14 years old. They said they cut off his access to the internet, but somehow he was able to call the company to hook him up to his own connection that his parents had no control of. At the age of 14, how the fuck do you do that?
I don't know, but we also have had stories on here about kids buying plutonium pretending to be college professors.
I mean, that's true. When they first discovered what he was watching, they were worried and actually contacted CPS and the police about all of it. But that didn't do anything because these kinds of videos were not illegal. So at this point, that's 10 years of him watching this shit. Police also found various notepads that had stories Jamie had written about torturing, raping, and killing. One in particular was called The Georgia Williams in Surprise. And this basically pointed out what he had planned to do since he started writing it in January and finished it 3 weeks before he killed her. So premeditated.
Yeah.
The photos corroborated this because he literally took pictures of everything step by step. So
everything in the book.
What he wrote is exactly what happened. Dear diary.
Yeah.
The police were still unable to get any information out of Jamie about why he did what he did, where he put George's body. He was acting as if he still had no clue what they were talking about.
As they always tend to fucking do.
Mm-hmm. They had no choice but to try and figure out what happened on their own since Jamie was being fucking useless. They went to neighbors and neighboring businesses in the area around Jamie's family home asking if anyone had camera footage from outside that could help them go in the right direction. They did find some things. They obtained camera footage from the gas station while he was getting gas before he went to Glasgow. They got video of Jamie stopping in a movie theater 60 miles away from home, going inside and watching a movie. What makes that worse is that George's body was in his van that entire time. This motherfucker went and watched a movie at the theater with her body just laying out there.
But if it's in a van, like we're thinking of, nobody would have actually seen her body. So he's like just being super casual about that shit.
Yeah.
Fucking weird.
Unfortunately, this is all they were able to get on video. Nobody else had anything. The police were stopped in their tracks with very little to go on in terms of direction and where Georgia was, so they put out a statement to the public asking for anyone to come forward if they knew something. They put Jamie's van information out there as well in case someone just so happened to have spotted it in the wild. And it actually worked. Multiple people called in saying that they saw a van that matched that exact description and that they had seen it on a mountain pass in North Wales that was just trees, like a forest of trees. They remembered the van had gotten stuck in the mud, and one of the people that called in had stated that, yeah, they were stuck in the mud. I went over to offer assistance, again, not knowing that there was a dead 17-year-old laying in the back of the van. This at least gave the police an area to start searching.
Right.
To the detriment of everyone involved, in and around this investigation, the police found a naked, deceased body on May 31st. The body was picked up and taken back to Shropshire for autopsy. June 4th, it was confirmed that the body was that of Georgia Williams. Her cause of death was due to pressure that was applied to her neck. So it was the noose that he put her in. June 14th was the day of Georgia's funeral, and there were hundreds of people in attendance. She was even given a police escort through town and to her final resting place. Up to the point of the police finding Georgia's body, Jamie had played innocent, and he did this all the way up to the first day of his trial. Jamie had initially denied murdering Georgia, but on his first day of trial, he wound up pleading guilty to everything he had been charged with. The judge, Justice Wilkie, stated that Jamie had the potential to progress to become a serial killer. No shit. He called Jamie a sexual deviant. On December 19th, Jamie Reynolds was sentenced to life in prison at the Stafford Crown Court. And to date, he is the youngest in their history to be sentenced to life. On October 14th, 2014, Jamie appealed to have his life sentence taken away, but that was immediately denied.
Good.
From what I've gathered, it seems as though when you get a life sentence in the UK, it is a legitimate life sentence. There is no getting out in 25 to 30 years like it is here. So Jamie's still in prison and will continue to be there until he's dead.
Good, because I don't even think they have the death penalty still over there like we do here.
Yeah. So again, be careful who you trust and even consider to be your friend, because all in all, you may not be a friend to them.
Right.
Be careful. People suck. That's all.
I do. I was like sitting here waiting for the whole part, piss you off part like last week. And I mean, other than him doing his stupid shit, obviously, not having to mention the obvious of him fucking killing somebody. But I was thinking like last week with, you know, oh, it's like she just got a slap on the fucking wrist kind of deal is what I was thinking.
No.
Was going to happen here.
The thing that pissed me off is that he was a loner. She is the only person that tried to befriend him and include him in everything. Mm-hmm. And he fucking killed her. Literally kicked the box out from under her feet to kill her.
Right.
That's the whole thing pissed
me off. Was this because he wanted it to be more authentic, or if it was the more of the, if I can't have her, nobody's going to have her kind of thinking with
it was more, like that? It goes back to me saying that after she denied his advances, he had a serious dark ass obsession with her.
Well, even still having that obsession, he could probably still have that way of thinking of, like I just said, the if I can't have her, nobody's going to have her kind of thing. And
could be.
But who knows? We don't know.
Just a fucked up individual.
That's just my opinion, my guess on the whole thing.
Couldn't take being rejected is my point of view.
Yeah. So, yeah, this episode's going to be more like the old days, you know, if you're bringing in the doom and gloom and I bring in the bright and shiny goofy shit at the end.
Yeah.
If you think about it, really, because of this suggestion that we got. It's just like, it was... The whole thing's fucking wild. I was like, all right, fine, I'll look into it. So, and then I started reading the details. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this story. So,
yeah.
So with the 2024 Olympics just, you know, coming to a close, it's been somewhat of a wild ride because, you know, if we've had Snoop Dogg being, you know, like the ambassador for the United States.
The fucking greatest.
Right. And then, you know, also Flava Flav being part of it as well, too, with the funding, what was it, the women's water polo team or something like that?
I don't remember. Something that doesn't get a lot of recognition
I know he's had a huge part of it, and of course, you know, all the accusations of Satanism, you know,
from opening ceremony, satanic Gojira.
Yeah, well, not just them, about them saying, oh, they stole Last Supper. No, go look into Greek mythology. Yeah, and also, like, allegedly one of the performers in that scene, his ball sack popped out, but it was actually going to be a pair. That's why the original video got taken down.
I didn't hear
from that whole presentation in Dionysus on the what was supposed to be a table and was actually a runway from a fashion show. Yeah, like the original videos of it got taken down because his ball sack popped out or something, or tore, like,
but it was a pair.
Yeah, was it a pair? No, not Dionysus himself, one of the background people. It was supposed to be his nuts job popped out because of a tear in the suit or something.
But it was a pair.
Okay. The triathlon athletes throwing up on live television after accidentally swallowing water from the river.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Yeah. Because I remember them talking about it. I was like, it might only be two events. Just the bacteria level's too high, this, that, and the other.
Well, they didn't allow them to practice the swimming in the river because of bacteria levels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And no, you've been following the coverage closer than I have.
Yeah.
And, you know, then there's been the one athlete that had his metal dreams crushed by, you know, his sausage hit in the high bar.
I know. That's how embarrassing, but like, way to go.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah, because he's gotten offers from websites, too, after that whole fiasco.
Well, porn websites.
Well, yeah, but still, he's got an offer. It's like, hey, if the Olympics isn't going to work out for you, we got an offer for you.
Your dong too big.
And then, you know, there's been some wholesome moments, you know, along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Olympian from Turkey in the air pistol getting silver, how they pointed out he just came in and, like, looking like just a dad.
Front, like, walked in right off the street. Right. No country representation whatsoever.
Yeah. That, you know, no headphones, earmuffs. Like, he did have earplugs in. I did see that from another side shot. He did have earplugs in.
He did not have safety glasses on. Yeah. He just kept his regular ass glasses on.
Glasses, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Chinese silver medalist, when the other two from France, I believe it was doing the iconic pose of biting the medals, and she just looks over in shock and then brings hers up to her face.
Uh-huh.
She's like, kind of like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to do that. It's been, like, considered the most wholesome moment of the Olympics.
Oh, jeez.
And then just before we recorded this, they actually had to evacuate the Eiffel Tower because somebody was, like, climbing up the side of it. hours before the closing ceremony was supposed to.
Nice.
Supposed to happen, but from what I can see from the picture, the guy knew what he was doing because he had a chalk bag on his waist, so clearly he rock climbed, so he knew.
Yeah.
Knew what, I'll say he knew what he was doing very loosely.
Can we just talk about the breakdancing really quick?
Yeah.
Look what I can do.
Yeah, and then, you know, I wouldn't have had on my bingo card for the Paris Olympics that breakdancing would be introduced into a new Olympic event.
The chick from America. I did not catch her name.
Right.
I'm going to need you to go and watch her whole ass performance.
Okay.
It literally screams Stewart.
Okay. Is this the one with the hat?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Because I've been seeing things about them comparing her to somebody from Bob's Burgers or something.
It's...
I don't know.
I'm not a dancer.
Right.
But if I was, what she did is exactly what my fucking attempt at normal dancing would look like. It's... Just watch it.
Okay. But even though these Olympics have been eventful, I guess you can say, with this, that, and the other, even to, you know, controversial things because of people not knowing about biology from with the one of the boxers from another country.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's been people been doing knee-jerk reactions on that stuff, not understanding, you know, genetics and biology and whatnot, trying to claim that she was a man originally when she was from a country where it's absolutely illegal to be transgender.
Yeah.
From what I also understand, she's now also starting to file lawsuits.
Oh,
because of the slander from, you know, all
is that she stuff. Just real beefy, like super muscular?
Because it has to do with her chromosomes, if I remember correctly. I don't remember all the details off the top of my head. She actually produces naturally an extra large amount of testosterone, but she is a, you know, biological female.
Yeah.
But even though in the almost over the 100 years of what is now known as the modern Olympics, they've all had their controversial moments.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I'm going to be talking about the marathon race of the 1904 Olympics.
1904?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the 1904 Olympics were held in St. Louis, Missouri, and they were officially named the Games of the Third Olympiad. It ran from July 1st to November 23rd in 1904. This also took place during the World's Fair. Chicago originally had won the bid to host the 1904 Olympic Games, but the organizers of the World's Fair wouldn't accept another international event in the same time frame. The fair organizers did plan to have their own sports events and told the Chicago Olympic Committee they intended to eclipse the Olympic Games unless they moved them to St. Louis. The founder of the modern-day Olympics, Pierre de Coubertin, intervened and ordered St. Louis to host the Games that year. The 1904 Games would introduce boxing, dumbbells, catch wrestling, which would become known as freestyle wrestling later on, like what my nephew did.
Yeah.
And the decathlon. All your staple sports were part of the series of games, but two notable events that are no longer part of the Olympic Games are tug of war and roque, which is a form of croquet, but is played on a hard court surface.
How long ago did they take tug of war away? Because I feel like I've seen that.
They might have brought it back for like a...
An anniversary an type thing. An
exhibition kind of thing. Okay. Whatnot, but I do have some more goofy ones here at the end.
Okay.
Basketball, hurling, and American and Gaelic football were also done as like exhibition games in demonstration mode, which what I thought the breakdancing was going to be. But no, apparently that's like, was that like actual for medals? Okay.
Yes.
That's what I thought. But Gaelic football is... If I'm sure you've never heard of it, points are awarded either by punching or kicking the ball through an upright goal similar to football. So I'm going to guess this is more like rugby.
Soccer type, yeah.
Yeah.
Our soccer, their football.
Yep. But those were not official Olympic sports. They were just demonstrations. And they also did demonstrations of women's boxing this year. The swimming events were held in a temporary pond also where lifeboats deemed unsinkable were being demonstrated for the World's Fair.
They were doing it. Like at the same time?
Not at the same time. They use the same
place. Okay.
But the one event, like I said, we're talking about is the men's marathon race from this Olympic Games.
Okay.
The countries that were included in this race were the United States, France, Cuba, Greece, South Africa, Great Britain, and Canada. This would be the first time Cuba and South Africa would have representation in this event because a lot of them came over from the like showcase of cultures from around the world, and it was a part of like the hot button topic from this, other than this whole event, it was because some racism was involved with it because of it was to show like how lesser athletes are compared to some of the other people from like actual runners is what this was supposed to be.
There's got to be fucking racism and everything.
Well, you got to think different time.
I know.
Before compared to what it is now.
I know.
that was like a normal day thing, as much as I hate to say that.
I know.
So Felix Caraval was representing Cuba, and he was a mailman before he became a marathon runner and would raise money to make it to the games by demonstrating his running ability throughout Cuba. But he would lose all of his money in a dice game in New Orleans and hitchhike the rest of the way. He would show up to the race dressed in long pants and a white shirt. One of the other racers would help him by cutting his pants off at the knees, making the race more comfortable for Felix. And the pictures I did see of him, they didn't look like they were really cut. They looked like they were actual shorts. So it could have happened. It could be a legend. It was a toss-up in between sources. The one said it actually happened, and some say it was just a legend.
Gotcha.
Like I said, this is also the very first time South Africa would have representation. And I'm probably going to murder these names because I forget the link of pronunciation guides. Lynn Tonier and John Mishani would already be in STL from the World's Fair as part of the South African cultural exhibit. And they both served as long-distance message runners during the Boer War. Some people said they had ran barefoot, but Mishani had worn shoes, and there was photographs to back this up that he had shoes on during the marathon.
Okay.
Some of the previous runners were also Olympic runners from the 1900 games in the Boston Marathon, which was still fairly new as it only began in 1897. 32 athletes represented the seven countries, but only 14 would complete the race due to poor organization and officiating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So with the marathon itself, we did learn in episode 51 about Cliff Young, the sheep farmer that ran in gumboots, that marathons today now have a set distance of 26.1 miles. In honor of legend of Pheidippides, Pheidippides, the Greek messenger, running from Marathon to Athens to deliver the news of the victory over the Persians. The 1904 Olympics was the third time that the marathon race was held since its beginning in 1896. So they were more making up things as they went along in the early Olympic Games, is what's going on, because like I said, we learned in 26.1 is the official marathon distance, and anything over that is an ultra marathon.
Even if it's 0.1?
If it's over 26.1, it's considered an ultramarathon.
Huh.
So yeah, if it's 26.2, it's an ultramarathon now, which they probably really wouldn't do it at. But so this race was held on August 30th, and it covered 24 miles and 1,500 yards, which is 12 and a half football fields long.
Jesus.
That's 1,500 yards. They ended up running this marathon in the hottest part of the day, whereas now they are held in the earlier parts of the day where the temperatures are cooler. And this race probably helped shape a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
The high temperature that what I could find was somewhere between the low 90s with the humidity being at 90% and probably making it feel more like the hundreds.
Jesus.
I just went average on temperature because it was all over the place on it. Because
90
like,
degrees with 90% humidity?
Yep.
Jeez.
The start of this race would be held with runners making 5 laps around the Francis Olympic Field in Washington University and the remainder being ran on country roads. So, 1904 country roads, what do you think? They're paved? Probably not. No, absolutely not. I mean, even there's still some around here that aren't. I mean, they're all over. There's still dirt roads all over the place. So, after they would end up making their 5 laps, the rest of the course would have 7 hills varying from 100 to 300 feet high, with some ascents to being the crest. So, I know you got to think, yeah, it's 300 feet, but it's at an incline, basically.
And that shit sucks.
Right. Yeah. So they're running basically up to this 300-foot peak of crest of a hill at some point. A part of the course that ran through Crevecoeur had to be rerouted because the road's being washed out due to the rains that recently happened, causing this stupid amount of humidity that they got to run in.
Wasn't the corn.
No, probably wasn't the corn at this point. Even with the high humidity, the roads were dry, causing dust to be kicked up from the chase vehicles and the leading cars from the race as well. Ugh. Cracked stones in the roadway made it for dangerous footing while keeping their pace for the runners. Water to keep the runners hydrated was scarce, and there were only 2 secure fresh water spots, which would be at 6 miles and a water tower at 12 miles into the race. And this was also done intentionally by James Sullivan, the chief organizer of the games, to research the limits and effects of purposeful dehydration.
I didn't know dehydration was purposeful ever.
Right. Like, you know, there's a lot of science stuff that still goes on during the races. I mean, look at some of the technology stuff from like all the games that they use. And they showed how they determine the winner of a race also.
Mm-hmm.
And also the course was not cleared of any obstacles, so runners had to dodge cross-town traffic, delivery wagons, trains, trolleys, even people just out walking their dogs, etc.
So this wasn't even like a closed off event. They had,
nope, this is just the whole willy nilly. We're making a marathon thing and this is how we're going to do it. So during the race, like I said, it was in the hottest part of the day. This race started at 3:03 p.m. And the first casualty that I could find would be John Lourdain, who won the Boston Marathon in 1903, and he became ill for an unknown reason at about 10 miles in. I tried to find out if what it was. A lot of these people did drop out due to the high heat and humidity, plus the dust from the dirt roads picking up. But I do have a small list of, I guess, not really obscure, the more documented reasons why runners did not finish this race.
Uh-huh.
Sam Miller, who was a favorite to win the marathon, would suffer severe cramping in his stomach and become disoriented at the halfway mark and would drop out. And Tuane of South Africa would become, he would come in at ninth place, but race observers believe he could have done better if he had not been chased off a mile off the course due to a stray dog chasing him.
Really?
Yeah. William Garcia on the United States team nearly died 8 miles from finishing the race from internal hemorrhaging caused by the dust coating his esophagus and ripped its stomach lining.
Did he live through that?
Yeah, he made it. God, if he had not been found, he would have died. Felix Caravelle, the mailman from Cuba, didn't let the weather conditions get him down, as the St. Louis Dispatch stated that he waved his cap and yelled enthusiastically when they passed him in the 3-mile marker and suffered from carbon during this race. Along this course, he spotted spectators eating some peaches and asked if he could have one. They would refuse to give Felix one of their peaches, so he ended up snatching two anyway and ate them as he ran. Later on, he ended up needing another snack and he ate some apples from a tree which happened to be rotten.
Ew.
He suffered cramps 9 miles into the race and he eventually slowed down to a walk and lay down to take a nap. He would end up completing the race in fourth. So he slept it off and got up and finished the marathon.
And still came in fourth. How long was the nap?
It did not specify how long his nap. They all said he just lay down and took a nap. With the 32 racers that entered this marathon, only 14 would finish, and the marathon would be won by Fred Lors, a bricklayer from New York City, and he would finish the race in a time of 3 hours and 13 minutes, but he was disqualified.
Why?
Before he was given his medal, spectators spoke up saying they had seen Lors riding in a car waving at spectators and other runners as they drove by taking him back to the stadium, and the car broke down at 19 miles. He started to suffer cramps at the 9-mile mark and originally dropped out until he got this ride. He admitted to getting this ride after he was confronted by officials and claimed he was only playing a practical joke and never intended to accept the honor, and he would be banned for life from the Amateur Athletes Union. The official winner would be Thomas Hicks, a brass worker from Cambridge, Massachusetts. He was also a U.S. favorite to win this marathon race. During that time, the rules of the marathon stated runners are allowed to be coached, assisted by race officials. At 10 miles, he would beg for a drink of water from a support crew, but they would refuse and only sponge his mouth with warm distilled water, which, you know, your body won't absorb liquids until it reaches a body temperature, so that's more than likely why they gave him warm distilled water as some kind of hydration. But also, they were running this experiment too at this point. Mm-hmm. So that's probably why the race officials wouldn't give him an actual drink. He is also one of the first recorded uses of performance enhancers used in the Olympics. 7 miles from the finish, he was given a concoction of egg whites, brandy, and 1.1 milligram dose of strychnine, which is fatal in large doses, commonly used as a stimulant in the early 1900s.
Wow.
He would begin to hallucinate about a mile and a half from the end, believing he still had 20 more miles to run, and begged to lay down, but his handlers refused this. When he got word that Lors was disqualified, race official Charles Lucas wrote in his book about the 1904 Olympics, "Over the last 2 miles of road, Hicks was running mechanically, like a well-oiled piece of machinery. His eyes were dull, lusterless, the ashen color of his face and skin had deepened. His arms appeared as weights well tied down. He could scarcely lift his legs while his knees were almost stiff." Hicks' official time to win was 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 53 seconds, making this one of the longest marathons recorded in Olympic history. Hicks was carried over the finish line while he shuffled his feet as if he was still running. He would end up losing 8 pounds total during the marathon. If he had not been treated immediately by a team of 4 doctors, he would have died in the stadium itself.
Well, yeah, he was so fucking dehydrated. He sweated out until he had nothing left to sweat.
Right. He was also given 2 doses of strychnine during this race, and they believe if he had gotten 1 more dose, it would have killed him.
Wow.
That's somewhat of the wild ride of the 1904 Olympic marathon.
Thankfully, things have come a long way since that. Damn.
So here's my fun facts about the Olympics, even though it's not close.
What?
Fun facts. Yeah. The Olympics are held every 4 years to honor the ancient origins when the games were held every 4 years for dating purposes. The first modern games were held in 1896 in Athens, Greece. Strychnine has been forbidden for athletes since the 1960s when the International Olympic Committee started testing for drugs. And the last known use of strychnine occurred in the 2016 Olympic Games with Azat Ortov of Kazakhstan. A weightlifter was found using it during the 2016 Rio Games.
In 2016, yep. They were still using strychnine?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
The longest Olympic marathon time was held by a Japanese runner, Shijo Kanakori, with a time of 54 years, 249 days, 5 hours, and 32 minutes, and 20.3 seconds.
How is that possible?
At the 1912 Stockholm Olympics, he would collapse in embarrassment, and he would return to Japan without telling anyone, and he was declared missing. And he was eventually invited back to Sweden to finish his run in 1967.
Wow.
The Olympic flag was first created in 1913 and first used in the Pan American Games in 1914 in Alexandria, Egypt. The blue, yellow, black, green, and red rings on the white background were selected to represent all competing nations without one being specifically represented, and all of these colors are commonly found in all nations' flags. Some games that are no longer that are around today that either were there for a short time or just 1 year would be motorboat racing in 1908.
It's just a bunch of ladies standing there with their tops open.
I forgot to put the year in here. I think it was 1900. I forgot to type the year in. It was swimming obstacle courses. So yeah, think of like, it was like they would dive under a boat, then go over a boat, then dive under it.
Were the boats on?
Not the motorboats. This were like just rowboats anchored to the ground.
Okay. That,
like, they had
so I'm
to
like, damn.
Dive under and then come up over top, then back under.
Okay.
I think it was like the 1900 games. I forgot to put the year in here on what it was, which year it was. Pistol dueling showed up in 1908 for 1 year.
That sounds like a great event.
I've heard of this already. What they did is they used wax bullets instead, obviously.
They would still hurt, I'm sure.
Right, I'm sure.
Wax is hard.
Oh, I'm sure they probably had body padding and wax bullets is what they were using. God. Painting and sculpture was in the Olympic Games from 1912 to 1948.
Painting and sculpting? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rope climbing was in the Olympic Games from 1896 to 1932. Deer shooting from 1908 to 1924, which I figure you would question this one, is what it was, is they had, like, think of, like, Back to the Future Part 3 at the shooting gallery.
Uh-huh.
It's basically what it was, is they, like, have a silhouette of a deer, like, on a track, and they had to shoot at
it. So it wasn't actual deer they were having to track. And
they had to shoot at it. You know, it was for the fastest time to hit the target, basically. And it was, like, at 100 meters, I think, away. And it was on a track. And then they had to, you know, lead the target and hit.
Interesting.
You know, for accuracy and time, if I remember correctly, all the details.
Huh. That's something.
And there
Can you
was,
imagine if the Olympics looked like that now?
Right. Oh, I'm sure the numbers would get up if they would go back and do, like, honorary, like, the demonstration of games that no longer exist, like Tug of War or, like, winter games like ski acrobatics.
I've always wondered why, like, rock climbing was never a sport, an Olympic event.
I don't know.
Because that shit's pretty competitive.
Right. And I've done tower climbing when I was in Boy Scouts, and that shit'll kick your ass.
Like, I would much rather watch that than breaking.
Right. It was like a 25, 30 foot tower that we did in Boy Scouts for a merit badge.
It's still pretty big.
Yeah. Even in your teens, it still kicks your ass, even though you have a safety rope and everything, but still having to pull yourself up and push yourself up with your legs for only 30 feet like that's going to kick your ass.
I can imagine.
Even doing tire climbing was fun, but I know you couldn't do it.
Why?
Because you're afraid of heights.
Oh, tire climbing?
No, tower.
Tower, climbing. Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, tower rock no, climbing, thank you. You know.
No thanks.
But yeah, that's it for the 1904 Olympics.
That was definitely
I tried to find more, but a lot of lists came up with winter game, like, sports stuff. I couldn't really find a lot of summer ones. Like, the only winter one, like I said, was, like, the ski acrobat, like artistic skiing or some shit like that, or acrobatics. I don't remember how it was worded, but, like, I only found, like, one image. And, like, the one image looks like a skier is literally losing, like, their balance. The picture that I did see was like they had one skiing on the ground, the other one was in the air.
Oh, jeez.
Almost like it wasn't the best picture to use for that kind of thing.
Out of present times games, not games, but competitions, which one would you say is like your favorite to watch?
Like Olympics?
Yeah.
Summer or winter?
Either one.
I don't really have one, I guess you could say. I remember like you always like watching the bobsled shit.
Bobsleds are cool.
Right.
Mine's the synchronized swimming.
Right.
Especially when they do the split screen where you can see underwater right. How they're making all that shit happen. It's interesting.
Yeah. I seen a little video of that once before, just like how they all like are got their spot they had to be in for that underwater.
Like the ones that like shoot up out of the water.
Yeah.
Like you see all the other ladies around her, but you don't see the one that's underneath the one that's going to skyrocket.
Yeah.
Who's basically letting her stand on her feet and then gives a like push up and then kicks up with her feet. So she goes flying in the air.
Yeah. That's what the video was that I saw of some, I think it was a Chinese team. They showed how that all works.
Oh,
it was
to me, it's interesting.
It is because it's like all the coordination that has to go with it.
Yeah.
But didn't they change that to artistic swimming or something was the name of it?
It's so stupid.
I don't remember.
For anybody that's ever watched the fucking Olympics before this, it's synchronized swimming.
Right.
Why? Because you have to be in sync with the people that you're swimming with.
Right.
And they're not even swimming. They're dancing or something in the water.
They're doing something, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No. But I think it's time we get out of here for the day, sir. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.